What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, where you'll find out what the Fukushima's going on.
Welcome back to our show here, hour number two, and we're going to close the phone lines after this next phone call from Layla in Canada. Hello, Layla. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today? Hello? Layla dropped. All right. Well, then we're going to close the phone lines for a while here. Okay. For those of you watching on YouTube, this gorgeous creature sitting next to me is the lovely Lady Claire, who likes to join us on hour number two every Friday with her unique perspective on the world. And I understand that you have a specific subject that you're in high dudgeon about.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I think it is possibly one of the most concerning stories that most people haven't heard of here in the U.S., unless they go to the English language edition of Russian or Iranian press that's still alive.
Or they listen to Republic Broadcasting.
Yes, or they do that. Apparently, we have a situation between Azerbaijan and Armenia where war started last Sunday. And I want to give you all some of the backstory and about what is going on today in the very long disputed region of Nagorno-Karabakh. Now, this particular flare-up, it's over a territorial dispute, and it risks escalating into a major regional war. And let me explain to you why. Here we've got two former Soviet republics locked into a conflict rooted in feuds that are just generations old. Now, the current ongoing hostilities started on September 27th, becoming one of the most serious in a series of border clashes that have been occurring in the region on a fairly regular basis. The parties are fighting over Nagorno-Karabakh, which is a mountainous region located inside Azerbaijan, as recognized internationally, and some surrounding territories. Now, Baku, Azerbaijan, claims sovereignty on these based on borders set during the Soviet era and asserts that they have been occupied by Armenia. Now, Yerevan, which is the capital of Armenia, supports the predominantly Armenian population of Nagorno-Karabakh in their bid for independence. Now, there was an horrific, bloody war against Azerbaijan in the 90s. Now, Nagorno-Karabakh is among those places in the world where there is no really historically correct evidence on those on whose claims are actually stronger. It was always too distant and difficult to control for any particular power to become dominant in ethnicity or regions. Armenians and Azeris have been living there in a patchwork of settlements with a lot of old axes to grind. Now, the Russian Empire absorbed the region in the early 19th century after a war with Iran, but its goals were limited to preventing growing Armenian and Azeri nationalism from boiling over. After the Bolshevik Revolution at the beginning of the 20th century, a full-fledged war started. The Soviets got involved with their own agenda to retake control of the region and supported the territorial claims of the Azeris. Now, the reason was largely down to the Bolsheviks' desire for Turkey to eventually embrace communism. The Turks and Armenians were sworn enemies, and Joseph Stalin feared upsetting Constantinople, then the capital, by giving Yerevan the land that was desired by Baku. Thus, Nagorno-Karabakh ended up as an autonomous region of Soviet Azerbaijan. And when the USSR fell apart, disintegrated, It led to a repetition of the exact same scenario. In 1998, the authorities of Nagorno-Karabakh, which remained predominantly Armenian in ethnic makeup despite Azerbaijani administration, petitioned Moscow to have their lands transferred to Armenia. Well, Moscow said, yet. And so tensions mounted, escalating into a full-fledged war in 1991. And that was fought between independent Azerbaijan and the self-proclaimed Nagorno-Karabakh Republic, backed by Armenia. Now, that puppy lasted until May of 1994 and claimed an estimated 15,000 to 25,000 lives on both sides, also forcing hundreds to flee. I mean, this was nasty, Mike.
It was thousands, hundreds of thousands to flee.
Yeah. And the truce signed then with Russia's mediation left Nagorno-Karabakh in control of most of the territory it held as part of Azerbaijan, plus large swathes of land connecting it to Armenia and to Iran, and a small portion on the Azeri side. What were they thinking? Let's go to the present day. And apparently, Armenia's S-300 missiles are active over Yerevan as a protection, as Azerbaijan is stepping up suicide drone use. And the war between these two areas appears to be spinning out into a broader conflict, as we're seeing footage of increasingly heavy and advanced military hardware appearing. Now, as late as yesterday, there are reports that Armenia's Russian-supplied S-300 systems are active near the capital of Yerevan, Armenia. There are new viral videos circulating on military channels purporting to show the S-300 missiles intercepting a possible enemy drone or inbound rocket right near the capital. That's got to be scary for those people, Mike. Footage from Armenian shoulders shows the moment when an Azerbaijani IAI Harap loitering musician, also called suicide
drone. Got to watch out for those musicians.
Yes, they're terrible. Okay. Target what was claimed to be a troop transport bus in Vardanus, Armenia. Now, amazingly enough, and you wouldn't think this for little Azerbaijan, they've got a very sophisticated drone program. And they have been supplied for years by Israeli defense firms, including so-called kamikaze drones. Now, these suicide drones appear to be in use right now by Azerbaijan's army. And Armenia has just recalled their ambassador from Israel over Azeri weapon sales. And apparently Israel is providing Azerbaijan with about 60% of its weapons. I wonder where the other 40% is coming from. Mike, what do you think?
You know, black market, U.S., Russia,
yeah,
Iran, who knows?
The usual suspects.
Yes.
And the fighting continues. The fighting is getting worse. And an Armenian foreign spokeswoman said that the ambassador was recalled in protest of Israel's supply of ultra-modern weapons to Azerbaijan. Now, apparently, Israel and Azerbaijan are major trading partners with weapons and other things. Now, Hikmet Hajayev, the assistant to the president of Azerbaijan, told Israeli media on Wednesday that Azeri forces are definitely, he confirmed that Azeri forces are using attack drones in Nagorno-Karabakh. And Hajayev said that the Azeris are very appreciative of cooperation with Israel, especially with defense. Now, what has been noted by plane spotters is that Azeri cargo planes have been spotted landing at an Israeli Air Force base this week. And it's kind of a common thing for these planes to come and go. But the frequency and the timing indicate that what's happening is that the Israelis are supplying more weapons for Azerbaijan right now, as we speak. And the conflict here has never really been resolved, only frozen, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So the resumption of hostilities didn't come up out of the blue. Apparently, major flare-ups, not unlike the current one, occurred in 2014, 2016, and July of this year. But what is different, what is driving this, is the stance taken by Turkey, a longtime backer of Azerbaijan and Armenia's historical nemesis. And you might remember that about 100 years ago, World War I, there was this horrific genocide of Armenians. And Turkey will never take responsibility for it.
And Israel doesn't want us to talk about it because there's only one Holocaust and genocide, and that's theirs, and everybody else is guilty of trademark infractions.
And so what Erdogan has been doing, America's frenemy, Ankara has been openly goading Baku into seizing the disputed lands by military force. Now, this situation is putting Russia in a rather delicate, shall we say, situation,
yes,
as Moscow is a longtime ally of Armenia and has a military base there. But at the same time, Russia has been working with Turkey on a number of international issues, such as bringing peace to Syria. Now, over the past couple of days, the Kremlin and the Russian Foreign Ministry have been calling on all parties to the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict to take a deep breath and return to negotiations. Now, there was another article also coming from antiwar.com. If you've never looked at this blog, please do yourselves a favor and do. And this article is authored by Major Danny Sersin, USA retired. And he says, no dog in this fight. Nagorno-Karabakh's conflict isn't about us or Russia. And he notes that if there was any further proof needed, that a utility-diminishing NATO has all but reached its breaking point. On Wednesday, French President Emmanuel Macron blamed Erdogan's warlike rhetoric for removing Azerbaijan's inhibitions in reconquering Nagorno-Karabakh. Now, these ostensible NATO brethren have traded insults after their navies nearly came to blows off Libya's coast this July, each calling the other and perhaps the whole alliance brain dead. And Mike, maybe both are right.
They may well be right. But yeah. I mean, the danger situation here is that if Russia comes in to aid Armenia and Turkey comes in, and Turkey's already apparently running Azerbaijan's air force for them.
Yeah.
you know, Turkey could invoke the NATO alliance on that side. Russia's on the other side. And we're really off to World War III.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's that minor matter that in backing Turkey in Nagorno-Karabakh, America is siding with a government full of official genocide deniers about the Armenian genocide, World War I. And part of the reason for all those fraught ties between Ankara and Yerevan is that the Turks will not confess to displacing, starving, and killing a million or so Armenians during the First World War. And it's a deeply held non-culpability delusion. And Sersin talks about in 2016, he was with a Turkish exchange officer in a strategy class at Fort Leavenworth, nearly tore his head off when he politely nudged this guy on the subject. Now, apparently, this Turkish exchange officer soon left the course and sought asylum in the U.S., after Erdogan stymied a suspicious coup attempt in July, fearing himself among the many military personas non grata in its wake. Now, the madman number three is Boggy Bottom.
You
know, the boys in D.C. and their imaginary Russia monster friend. Finally, the world's family's crazy, curmudgeonly uncle, Uncle Sam, is more than a wild card at any time in 3+ decades of Nagorno-Karabakh strife. Washington styles itself the foremost honest broker for global conflicts, but it never really seems to do that. Ever heard of Palestine? I'm just saying. However, as Nagorno-Karabakh has shown, even the most tangential and distant discord belies America's professed straight dealing. Old Sam hasn't yet met a far-flung fracas from which he won't take sides, seeking personal benefit, accelerate, and counterproductively catalyze for quite some time. And if Washington catches a whiff of Russia, well, Mike, as you just said,
it's game on.
It's game on.
It's game on.
Yeah. The U.S. has long had its vulturous eyes on the reason on the region, especially after the Soviet Union's final collapse in 91. It still does, maybe more now. And Sersin mentions again, when he was a student at the Army's Command and General Staff College in 2016-27, interestingly enough, way back then, all the officers focused almost exclusively on planning fictitious but highly realistic combat missions in the South Caucasus, where this area is. And the recurring scenario involved, get this, take a breath, defending Azerbaijan, and incidentally, its pipelines and Caspian Basin energy sources from a northbound attack from a breakaway statelet of ethnic Azeri-Iranians planned, practiced, simulated offloading troops, tanks, and supplies at Georgia's Black Sea port through its capital, Tbilisi, of course, neatly bypassing Russian and Armenian territory, and staying clear of the Nagorno-Karabakh Third Rail, naturally, in the front lines in southern Azerbaijan. Come to think of it, in the war game, U.S. forces traced a rather reverse route of the corporate-crafted BTC Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan-Turkey pipeline. Must have been a coincidence. It couldn't have been real, right?
No, of course not.
And Surgeon is saying, to be fair, his joint strategy instructor was a thoughtful, sensible guy who eschewed the mission's potential for grandiosity, always questioning ambitions, challenging assumptions, and emphasizing regional tensions and limitations. This is a real politic guy, whoever this teacher was.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he was the person who truly piqued this writer's interest on Nagorno-Karabakh. That said, to my knowledge, he didn't choose the scenario. And the fact that similar war games infuse the military world for a couple of decades speaks to the thinking in Washington. And while Armenia stayed tangential to the CGS training, it was quite clear that Azerbaijan was the protected protagonist invaded by putatively Iranian factions, and of course the Russian menace was always in the air.
Gosh darn Russians.
All of which reflects an increasingly, if inconsistently, Azeri-friendly U.S. posture since the late 90s. Now, despite the real but often inflated influence of the Armenian-American lobby, consider it the Kardashian factor. Kim has been weighing in with a number of tweets, and so has her brother. The Washington winds have been blowing Baku's way for quite some time. As Antiwar.com's own the late Justin Raimondo, a rare NK watcher, explained during the first major post-truce explosion in 2016, U.S. policy in the South Caucasus is driven by two main motives, energy and the encirclement of Russia. The view from Moscow, and frankly the objective outer space, is clear. Since the late 1990s, the U.S. has geographically overt NATO eastward bound expansion, and diplomatically by denying legitimacy to Russia's sphere, or, say, in regional affairs caged in the bear, Washington would have gone far further if it's at minimum encouraged color revolutions along Russia's border. Rose in Georgia, 2003, orange in the Ukraine, 2004, denim and tulip, Belarus and Kyrgyzstan, 2005, hadn't fallen flat and that pesky Putin hadn't used force in 2008 to keep a rather aggressive little Georgia from joining NATO. But it's only gotten worse since then, as the entire bipartisan Washington establishment has donned fact-resistant Russia alarm goggles, particularly since Donald Trump's election. Mike, what do you think about that?
Well, that's true, and yeah. It really doesn't have that much to do with Donald Trump. It would have been the same thing with Hillary Clinton back in 2016.
I agree.
But the U.S. has gone back, the U.S. government, rather, has gone back to that Cold War mentality,
mm-hmm.
That you and I are old enough to remember what that was like originally.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, war is good for the war business, and they're all invested in the war business.
Mm-hmm.
And every time the U.S. gets itself into an economic mess, they get into a world war to try and get out of it or at least distract from it. We have to take a break now for some commercials.
Okay.
And we'll be back with more Lady Claire after these few words.
There are Russian Broadcasting Network late night premiere show of Red Pill Hardcore is hosted by activists that want to hear from you, the listeners, so that you can get involved in the activism. Please call in at 800-313-9443 at 10 p.m. to enter the discussion. To book yourself as a guest, call our studio at 202-657-5715 or contact RBN staff. Remember, keep it real and take the red pill.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. Join Mike on the air. Call toll-free 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443.
Welcome back to our show here. And before we turn the mic back over to the lovely lady Claire here, we're getting word now that President Donald Trump is being sent to Walter Reed Medical Center, which strikes me as more of a precautionary thing now that he's tested positive for COVID-19. So, Lady Claire, take it away.
Right. I was going to continue. Apparently, pundits and politicians alike now view every global conflict through these Moscow-facing lenses. Moscow's always the bad guy.
If it isn't Iran.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what's going on, it's Iran-linked. You know, mm-hmm. Iran-linked rioters are burning Portland. And
yes.
That kind of nonsense.
Yeah. And then there's the money to follow.
Yes.
While its market sources and the U.S. supply situation have since diminished certain energy urgency, Washington seems stuck in the oil is everything past. It was that calculus which in the late 1990s helped push America toward Azeri-amenable positions in the Caucasus. The key was that BTC pipeline and the announcement by Papa Aliyev, who is the president of Azerbaijan, of the contract of the century. Apparently, strong men speak similar slangs. That centennial deal amounted to an agreement with a consortium of oil companies, Amoco, Pennzoil, BP, Unocal, McDermott, Statoil, Lukoil, and the state-owned Turkish and Saudi enterprises, which granted them exclusive rights to Azerbaijan's oil and gas reserves. adding insult to injury, it's another inconvenient truth of his career that in 1997, now environmentalist guru and then Vice President Al Gore presided over the White House signing ceremony of four additional Caspian Sea contracts between Aliyev Sr. and U.S. oil giants Exxon, Chevron, Mobil, Amoco, which merged with British Petroleum BP a year later. These deals were reportedly worth some $8 billion. Now, I don't know about you folks, but $8 billion still sounds like a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. Certainly a lot more than we have. So keep those donations to RBN coming in, folks, okay?
Please. All right. And as it relates to Nagorno-Karabakh, there's one fact to keep in mind. Armenia has no oil reserves to speak of. But I'm sure that nasty corporate cash would never sway the evenness of Honest Abe's successor in Washington. Only wait for it. The 2016 burst of Nagorno-Karabakh combat, what Raimondo dubbed the April's Fool War, was launched by Azerbaijan just as Aliyev the Younger was flying back from Washington. In that meeting, Secretary of State John Kerry used suspiciously Azeri-inflected language, calling for an ultimate resolution to the decades-old conflict. Kerry, maybingly, unwittingly, had the incendiary phrasing, which was absurd, and Justin Raimondo wrote, because the crisis has already been resolved, meaning facts on the ground supported a de facto independent Nagorno-Karabakh that accords with self-determination as the world as it is, as well as the world as it is. No doubt there are serious outstanding issues, and Baku has real grievances. The expelled NK Azeris have a right to return, and seven additional Azeri majority occupied districts should be handed back to Baku. Nevertheless, by pretending that there's a solution that involves peaceful reintegration with Armenian supermajority Nagorno-Karabakh into Azerbaijan, the U.S. all but greenlights Baku's resort to game-changing conquest. Now, they talk about the ghost of Woodrow Wilson. Mm-hmm. Now, at the root, the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict and the U.S. perceptions of it come down to the seemingly incompatible tension between two geopolitical and international legal principles, Armenian self-determination and Azerbaijani territorial sovereignty. So far, all attempts to square that circle in Moscow, Brussels, and various international bodies has failed miserably. Washington, though, has barely tried, especially since the energy-crazy late 1990s and the September 11th, 2001 attacks. And the writer makes the observation, funny, isn't it, how inconsistently various American administrations have applied the self-determination principle pronounced by President Woodrow Wilson in January of 1918. Not that Wilson evenly applied his own policy either. Just ask anti-imperialists like Mao or Ho Chi Minh how they fared at the Versailles Peace Conference.
Not as well as Germany.
Oh, wow. Yeah, not good. And the Versailles Peace Conference planted the seeds that created the Second World War.
Yes.
Yeah. And in fact, from the first, contradictory commitment to popular sovereignty was an American trademark. You can talk to a Kurd or a Palestinian or some Kashmiris about that. And furthermore, since the fall of the USSR, the U.S. and a compliant West treat the synthetic post-Soviet state borders, justly called Azerbaijan, a Soviet fiction created by Stalin back in 1999. We're going to come back. We've got a break.
We've got to take another break. Yeah.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. John Hess, 5 out of 5 stars. Awesome. Probably my only review, but at age 40, I was getting bad heart throb and left arm pain, mainly before bed. I even stopped smoking and drinking sodas for a month, and that didn't work. After one day of taking Extendovite, it was gone and hasn't returned in 3 years. I've ordered Extendovite 13 times, so Amazon just said. Juliet Hordick. I've ordered this product before in liquid form. It is fantastic. My whole family's been on it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We have a special promotion going on at Republic Broadcasting. This is a fundraiser for Republic Broadcasting involving the Energy Planner. Mail me a postcard. My address is at my website at thelibertyman.com. We pick a postcard every other Thursday. When your postcard is drawn out, you get to buy an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285, $70 discount. $200 goes to Republic Broadcasting. You also get a 10% discount on my mattress pads. So get those postcards in, put your name, your telephone number, your email address on there, and when your postcard is drawn, you get to get an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285. Mattress pads, 10% off. Help us out at Republic Broadcasting and help yourself to get an Energy Planner at a deep discount. It's a win-win situation for everybody. We hope you can get these postcards in soon. Thank you very much.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
When all this twisted steel was swept away, did these remaining holes reveal what really happened?
Welcome back to our show here, and Claire is going to finish her little story here, and then we're going to start taking phone calls. Yeah. Claire, take it away.
Okay. And here are a few examples of where the Wilson policy kind of got messed up. Let's talk about Kosovar Albanians. And they were possessed with remarkably similar arguments as the Nagorno-Karabakh Armenians, by the way, apparently deserved to carve an independent state out of Serbia. Now, in fact, the U.S. Air Force went to war on behalf of the rather checkered Kosovo Liberation Army in the late Clinton era. Yet, Russian-friendly Abkhazian or South Osseta minorities who wanted out of post-Soviet Georgia, or even locals voting for autonomy or outside accession in Nagorno-Karabakh in 1991 or Crimea in 2014? Nah. Uncle Sam said they had no inherent right to self-determine or choose which state they lived in. Their borders were alterable.
Were inalterable.
Inalterable.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I remember that, especially the one about Crimea.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and what hypocrisy we saw coming out of Washington, D.C.
And to one. Popular sovereignty rights rests all and depends on which way the people in question are perceived to lean, east or west, so to speak. So inconsistency can still be consistent.
Yes.
And still, Russia doesn't deserve the baggage it gets regarding Nagorno-Karabakh, despite having a military base in Armenia and the country being a signatory to the Russian-led NATO facsimile Collective Security Treaty Organization, CESTO. Moscow isn't really close to Yerevan on this issue. While some claim Armenia has become a pawn in the Kremlin's geopolitical games because Russia convinced Armenia to scuttle an association agreement with the European Union and instead join the Eurasian Economic Union, a Moscow-led free trade bloc. Predictably, few Westerners bother to ask why Armenia should be tied to the EU. It's not even in Europe, Mike.
Yeah, no, it isn't.
Beside, the lukewarm relationship is reciprocated. Indeed, Russia's responsible hedging behavior during the NK conflicts has, according to the director of a think tank in Yerevan, engendered a justified Armenian perception of questionable and unreliable backing from Russia in the event the current fighting expands. Now, that's understandable, given that the spokesman for the supposedly neo-imperial-obsessed Kremlin said Monday that they're not even talking about military options.
No, they aren't.
Yeah. And what the concern is that Erdogan, with Turkey being a NATO member, will try to invoke Article 5 of the UN Charter.
Yes.
And that would put the U.S., with Turkey, with Azerbaijan, against Armenia, Russia, China, and heaven only knows who else.
Yes, in a mix. That would be a mess.
Yeah, and that is what I am hoping President Trump is going to be able to prevent from happening.
It's the year 2020.
Yes, okay. I know.
All right.
But he's going to have to tell Erdogan very firmly, no, if you continue to attack Armenia, no, this will not be authorized by NATO. This is not going to happen, and this can't stand. Because if Erdogan thinks he's got a chance here, he's going to push Azerbaijan just as hard as he thinks he can get away with.
He's basically hoping Russia will make an overt move
that
he can run to NATO and say, we've been attacked.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's we've
take
got the phone.
Calls.
We've got the phone lines are open. Let's take some phone calls, starting with Peter in Los Angeles. Hello, Peter. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Wow, guys. Claire, you did a hell of a job on that, honey. There's some serious research that went into what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
I back in the 90s when there was a conflict going on there as well, a good friend of mine who was a Air Force Academy graduate and signed to Air Intelligence and had been teaching at the Air Force Academy, finally got his PhD in history, but he was sent over there as a UN observer, and we packed the U.S. contingent of the UN with a bunch of intel guys, military intel. And he spent 6 or 7 months over there. And as a matter of fact, he may be the guy that Danny Surgeon is talking about. At any rate, you hit the nail on the head, Claire, when you talked about the disconnect. The Wilsonian Treaty of Versailles disconnect between the spoils of war and real politic and borders versus self-determination, because of course Poland was created out of Silesia, for instance. Czechoslovakia got the Sudetenland. Danzig was a free city and had a huge ethnic German population that wanted to reaffiliate with Germany. On and on, as you cited in the Balkans as well, that went down into the 90s is for conflicts. But it's always, you know, we've always been ostensibly been anti-colonialists. But you're right about Ho Chi Minh too, right? Ho Chi Minh was planning on self-determination, but you know, France was an ally and it was a colony, and so we went with France. It's been a cluster. Yeah, ever since then.
Yes.
Principles are good, but they're only principles that you can take when you can, because it conflicts with real politics. But man, I just wanted to tell you, Claire, that was really, really good. thank you for that. And that's it for me.
All right. Well, thank you for the phone call, and thank you for the kind words. And we're going to switch over to David in Boston. Hello, David. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Claire.
Hello.
Can you hear me okay, Michael?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay, because I can put my phone on mute if you have, but not on mute, but on take it off speaker. But Michael, I'm beginning to think that Claire taught Stephen Cohen everything that he knows.
What?
we take that as a compliment.
Thank you. I think, David.
Yeah. Yeah. Now let me ask you a brutally honest question, Michael. I'm sure
yes.
it doesn't happen very often, but occasionally, when Claire has to scold you for misbehaving, does she finish saying after she's done scolding you? Does she say, "Now is that Claire, Michael?"
No, I don't think she actually says that. You know.
Oh, okay. You can start saying that.
Wax for the rolling pin. We're over here.
Marching orders and saying, "Now, you tell him what to do and give him his to-do list for the day and say, "Now is that Claire, Michael?"
No,
doesn't quite work that way. No.
No, we've been together 29 years, and I would say that ours is a reasonably gently evolved relationship. That's how I describe it.
I'm not henpecked, and I have Claire's permission to say so.
Stop it.
Okay.
Yeah. Mike, you know what I say? This battle of the sexes when people get married, who's going to be the head of the family, and they fight about who's going to be the head of the family. You know, I wish.
Well, we take turns.
Huh?
We take turns. Seriously, what we have is we call the BBL, the big black line that goes down the middle of our household. And there are some parts of the household that Claire's very much in charge of. And there are some parts of the household that I'm very much in charge of. And we don't intrude onto each other's areas of responsibility and authority. I keep my hands off her desk unless I'm repairing her computer. She keeps her hands off my desk.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just a mutual respect thing. And it works really, really well.
Oh, great. I got scared for a second there. I thought you were going to tell me that if you split the house, Claire gets the inside of the house and you get the outside of the house.
No. It's not like that, David.
No,
honest.
Not at all. Not
honest.
At all.
But, Mike, you know, I'll finish up by squeezing some callers before the show ends. But you know what I say, Mike, and I think it would solve a lot of problems. But, you know, if this dispute arises, between who's going to be the head of the house, the husband, the wife, and blah, blah, blah. What I always say, well, why don't you just compromise and be reasonable, and you can both be the head of the house. And when people say, well, how can you have two heads of the house? One's going to be the head. Come on, that's ridiculous. How can you have two heads of the house, two heads of the household? And I say, I don't know, but I've always heard that two heads are better than one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, that's basically how we work here, and we don't really have an idea of who's in charge of the house, and I don't think we ever have, to be very honest here. And, again, we don't compete with each other, which is a lesson I learned from watching my own parents destroy their marriage. And so I make a point of, we don't play those games.
Right. Well, you know, you're true soulmates, obviously. So,
yes.
So soulmates don't have those kind of power struggles and everything. But hey, listen now. What else was I going to say? Oh, this is. I'll give you one laugh before I go here.
Okay.
What do you call it when President Donald Trump, when he's in these tough trade negotiations with President Xi Jinping, the president of China, right?
Okay, yes. Okay.
Xi Jinping, right?
Xi Jinping.
Yeah,
you're close enough to country and Western.
Yeah, so they usually sometimes they just call him President Xi, huh?
Yeah.
So where I'm going with this, when President Trump and President Xi have a trade dispute and everything, we call that a he said, she said problem.
Yeah.
She said, okay.
Doesn't quite work because it's actually his first name is Xi with an X. So it's he said.
I think the X is pronounced like a Z. She. I think it's pronounced Xi Jinping.
I don't know, but just work on it and, you know, come back to open mic night, you know, sometime next week.
Okay. Well, okay. How about this one? I heard you talking about MSG. What do you
yes.
get when you cross? What do you get when you cross MSG with RBG? You know, Ruth Bader Meinhof. You know, she just died. But
yeah, we you know.
With RBG, well, you get a double heavy dose of poison.
Okay. Well, thank you. Next. And thank you for the phone call, David. We're going to switch over to Dustin in New Jersey. Hello, Dustin. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
That was pretty. I'm not going there.
If I had a gong, I'd be ringing it.
Thank you.
Yes.
It's Xi Jinping.
Yeah.
Xi Jinping. And like, and guys, by the way, by 2030, China's GDP will be double of what we are. We'll be number three because India is going to be number two. That's just a topic for another day, another year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Claire, I called in yesterday. You know, it's a TLM, the tactical loitering munition. You saw that heartbeat, right? A heartbeat.
Yeah.
You guys have a Claire. Check out the French Spike. That's a missile France makes. They make a tactical loitering munition also. I mean, that's that's where we're at now. Isn't that nuts?
Yeah.
Like, basically, it's like you said, a kamikaze drone that can fly around for extended periods that just flies to its target. That's kind of scary, don't you think? I mean, I don't know. I mean, they all have different types of kilograms of, you know, explosives on it, but that's nuts. I mean, if you watch, anybody watch the videos, you're like, this is crazy. I mean, this is 2021 technology, guys. You know, gone are the days of the aircraft carrier, right, Mike? Like, it's hypersonic.
Yeah, I think they're definitely obsolete, and I don't think they'll survive the next world war. Dustin, are you there? I think we lost Dustin.
Yeah.
Let's switch over to Gary in Oklahoma. We lost Dustin. Let's switch over to Gary in Oklahoma. Hello, Gary. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yes. Hello, Michael. A longtime listener, first time caller.
Mm-hmm.
I Okay. Appreciate that. I'm sure Claire will nudge you if you're not.
Yes, she will.
I want to mention the diagnosis of Donald Trump getting the COVID, I think, is actually kind of a mixed blessing. Not so much for him personally, but, you know, if he's not going to take control of the debate more by trying to redirect the narrative back to reality, if he's just going to play along with them and try to, just look like he's...
Well, at this point, they're not even sure they're going to have the next two debates, you know, that it may just be the VP debate. Between Pence and Harris.
As far as a mixed blessing, that's what I'm referring to. There may not be another presidential debate, and that actually may help him to some degree as far as not having to lower himself to essentially apologize for things that, like, denouncing Proud Boys, you know, which has nothing to do with anything, but it was just a matter of him looking weak and trying to appease the left crowd, which he's never going to win anyway, so what's the point? I think all he had to do was just say, you know, look over to Biden and say, are you going to denounce BLM for their terrorism? And I think that would probably have ended that question right there, because they would have had some arguing and they would have just moved on and he wouldn't have had to look weak like that.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's not going to fight harder, I think he should just acquiesce to just not having another debate.
Well, I disagree, because most people thought he won Tuesday's debate. If it turns out that this particular infection is not all that bad, I'd like to see him back out there. Unfortunately, of course, we already know the debates are heavily rigged against him. That was certainly the case with Chris Wallace. We know the moderator for the next debate is a former Biden intern, who's tweeted out anti-Trump messages and said, you know, no way should Trump be president. That's why so many people are out there saying that Joe Rogan should be the moderator for the next debate.
I think that would be fun. I don't know if that will actually happen, because I think that would...
No, I don't think it'll happen either. The media is desperate to maintain control over the political discussions of the country. They're failing miserably. Right now, polls are showing 60% of Americans do not trust corporate media. And we're just trying to get more of them to come over and learn how to trust Republic Broadcasting and whatreallyhappened.com.
Oh, absolutely. Because I used to watch C-SPAN in the morning, their three-hour show from like 6 to 9 a.m. Central Time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like 5 to 8 Eastern. But Steve Scully is the future moderator if the next debate takes place. He's a host that sometimes does show the morning show. I know he does a lot of stuff behind the scenes, but
yeah,
his bias is obvious and it won't go well.
No, it won't. Gary, I got to let you go. We got to take another break for commercials. We'll be back with the last segment of today's program after these few words.
Is your property a financial burden and causing you grief? Have you tried to sell but can't find buyers? Or are you just too busy to sell your property? Don't worry. We have the right solution for you. We buy properties as is, with cash, close in 30 days, and pay all closing costs. Our service is ideal for property owners who are in pre-foreclosure, have high-end repair costs, experiencing financial hardship, going through costly divorces, are relocating, need cash for retirement, suffering family loss, or have tax liens. Whatever your situation may be, we can help you sell your property and get the money you need. If you own a single-family home or multiple family units, call us for a free consultation at 888-910-1037. That's 888-910-1037. Or visit our website at cashingproperty.com. That's cashingproperty.com. Sell your property fast and leave all your worries behind.
Extend your life with
After about a month of Extendivite, I don't know what it is about the circulation factor. I was able to increase the weight, increase the amount of sets I could do. It has to do with the oxygen getting to the blood. You should market this as an athletic performance. And I don't change anything about my diet or anything. I just thought, this is amazing. Bilberry extract has got something called resveratrol in it, which is the same stuff that you get from red wine. It's also good for eyesight, and I was reading that the Royal Air Force during World War II would give their pilots bilberry jam so they could have better night vision stuff. This is amazing.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed the newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
The newspaper? Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, a majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper does not give out the important attention on what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
We the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and
welcome back to our show here, last segment of our program on this Powhana Friday, and we've closed the phone lines because Claire wants to finish up this story about Armenia, Azerbaijan.
Yes. This writer concludes by stating, make no mistake, on its merits, Nagorno-Karabakh has not and need not be a classic proxy war. This isn't Libya or Syria, though Turkish and or American interventions could help make it so. And amazingly enough, our alleged favorite bad guys, Russia and Iran, I would love to see, by the way, the Hermitage at St. Petersburg, I would love to see Tehran.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think so either. But they have generally, Mike, shown incredible restraint in Nagorno-Karabakh, past and present. The former has quickly called on both sides to immediately halt fire and begin talks to stabilize the situation. One might assume that the latter would back its co-religionist Shia Muslims in Azerbaijan, or conversely, that Iran, pushed ever closer to Moscow by U.S. enmity, would tack towards Russia's treaty-aligned Armenians. Yet, Tehran rarely has come down strongly on either side. And few observers, even among the more aggressive Iran hawks, realize that the Islamic Republic is hardly a homogeneous state, because 20% of Iran's people are ethnically Azeri, which at 10 to 15 million souls is greater than the total population of Azerbaijan. Yet, lest one assume that that instantly translates into support for Baku, in fact, Persian-dominated Tehran tends to fear its occasionally restive Azeri minority and resents its northern neighbor's amenity to the Israeli encirclement of their embattled republic. Furthermore, Iran, like Armenia and mostly Russia, was notably excluded from the U.S.-organized Azeri Oil Consortium.
Well, that's definitely going to leave them less than cheerful.
Yeah, and I would just like to say in closing, everyone, please this weekend, please be very kind to each other. Be kind to the people you care about. Be kind to the people who are kind of a pain. You know what I mean. And
I refuse to name names.
No, I refuse to. But I'm saying just a little kindness, a lot more. And please use your time to exercise a little more compassion. America is so on the brink right now and so marginalized and angry at each other. And we need to pull back from that before we can be the America that can move forward as one country. And that, I think, is what we need to think about in the run-up up to the elections. We need to be able to have intelligent, respectful conversations.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when dialogue breaks down, you're inviting trouble. It's like the Kennedy brothers used to say, when peaceful revolution becomes impossible, violent revolution becomes inevitable. Okay, there is music here. Stay tuned for Steve Elkins. He's taking over the microphone from John Stadmiller. And, of course, is going to bring his medical expertise to the story about Donald Trump and COVID-19. Please spread the word of Republic Broadcasting. Spread the word of whatreallyhappened.com. Please donate. We will not be able to make it without your help. We'll be back on Monday. Aloha, America.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.